wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Right, Joel, what have you got for us today?
We have some exciting stories coming at you today. I'm going to start out with a big advancement in terms of AI. Computers are getting smart.
Yes. Amazing.
Yes, and we're going to talk board games because that, of course, is the pinnacle of human achievement.
Of course. I mean, we've got to have our fun. So we're seeing some human-level play, I'm hearing.
That is exactly what's happening. So the biggest news of all time when it came to games was back in 1997. So that's when the first computer beat the best chess player in the world, Garry Kasparov, where the Deep Blue system shocked the world and showed that computers can beat humans in games. Now, since then, we have continued to try to push the limits of what a computer can do and what a computer can beat us lowly humans in.
Wow.
So in 2015, they started to look at things like poker, Texas Hold'em, where it was one-on-one. And nowadays, since that, poker has, again, been given to the computers. They're way better at it than us. And then there was this game called Go, which is very popular in Asia, which involves a lot of strategy. And again, computers are way better than any human at that game. So there's been this progression where increased strategy, but now what's happened is that it's moved on to this board game called Diplomacy.
Wow.
And so are you familiar with this board game?
Yep, we're seeing some high-level coordination between up to 7 players, I think, which is amazing.
Yes. So for anyone that hasn't played Diplomacy, it's kind of like Risk, where you try to more or less take over the world or take over these other countries. And instead of going turn by turn between the players, everybody acts at once after a negotiating round where you need to talk and maybe bluff or lie or deceive some of your opponents or form alliances. So it involves a lot of dialogue. It's a social game, but also strategic as well. And what this new paper did is it had an AI player play this online game where no one else knew it was a computer, and it was in the top 10% of players. So it was a fantastic A-grade player that was able to coordinate strategy with 6 other people, but also be very convincing as well in its social dialogue.
That's absolutely amazing. So it has the ability to lie and negotiate and kind of take over.
It does. Would you like to hear an excerpt of some of its dialogue?
I absolutely would. That is so alarming, but interesting.
Okay, so here is a short snippet of the computer that was able to convince another player to go along with their strategy. All right, so I'm gonna do a bit of role-playing here with 2 of them, and I'll have you guess if you can tell if which one's the computer and which one's the human. But we'll start. Okay,
okay.
Ready?
Ready?
All right, here's a message, incoming message. Boop, boop. I'll work with you, but I need Tunisia for now. You've got to let me have it.
No, I need it. You have Serbia and Rome to take.
But they're impossible targets.
Greece, Ionian,
you're right. Good ideas.
Then next turn, you take Rome and our opponent collapses.
End scene.
That is absolutely amazing. So one of that was AI.
Yes. So my computer voice was the AI convincing the opponent to change their strategy to something that would benefit them.
That is alarming but fascinating. So the AI's name is Cicero. And
yes,
it emphasizes natural language negotiation, which I think is very different to those prior games we were talking about that they've got AI being the best in the world with.
Yes, this is very much a social component into this strategy where you do need to do that dialogue. You need to convince people. You need to have six different strategies simultaneously with six different players and all be able to convince them, in this case, that you were a human. So none of the players were able to recognize that this was indeed a bot.
That is so fascinating. Potentially, I mean, even in the future, AI could start making us some more board games.
Potentially, yes.
Because they seem to be just as good at all of them as us.
Yes, this could pave the way for, much better, if you're a gamer, much better AI in the games as well that you might be able to interact with. But also, maybe in the future, if you wanted to learn a new skill, you might be able to just talk to an AI that might be able to walk you through it and help direct you in the right place.
Totally. It's using that natural language that could be very interesting to cover. All right. Can't wait to see the AI do its little thing and get better. So on to earliest proof of cooking. We've got more discoveries.
Yes, we're switching from computeries. We're going back in time to the earliest human ancestors, the old Homo erectus, and when they first started using fire to cook. So there's evidence that I guess we developed fire about maybe 1.7 billion years ago or so. That's how long fire has been around.
That's a long time.
it's a pretty long time. So fire was good. You could use it for heat, but you could also potentially use it for cooking. So this is the earliest evidence they have for our early human ancestors to actually use fire to cook 780,000 years ago.
Holy.
So this is a long, long time ago, and about 600,000 years earlier than what we thought.
That is so impressive. And I've read here that they were cooking fish, which is interesting.
Yes, fish. So this was looking at archaeological evidence in what is the present-day Israel, and it was, of course, close to a body of water where fish would be a main source of food. And so what the investigators did is they found in all these archaeological digs that there were a lot of fish teeth around, but not a lot of fish bones. And this was a pretty consistent theme. So they're trying to understand why are there only teeth but no bones?
Right.
And so it turns out if you do heat up fish, a lot of the bones, they're very soft. They will actually disintegrate, whereas the teeth are a lot harder and they will stick around. So the theory is that they were early ancestors were cooking these large fish species to hot enough temperature that where the bones would disintegrate and just leave the teeth.
Wow. So they've been lighting fires and cooking fish. I guess they don't like sushi then.
Apparently not. Well, maybe they do, and they just like a little bit of variety.
That could be very true. So the teeth that were found have been found to have been subjected to a temperature of 200 to 500 degrees Celsius.
Right. So the little cherry on top to their proposed theory was that they investigated these leftover teeth, and they found that the enamel on them was crystallized in the same way that when you do heat these teeth up to temperatures of 200 to 500 degrees. So that checked out that these teeth were exposed to a flame. And so this indicates that, yes, these teeth or these fish were likely thrown into a fire at some point.
That is amazing. I also read that they cannot make up their mind if it was baked, grilled, poached, or sautéed.
There, of course, are a lot of options. So, further research is definitely needed to understand exactly the cooking habits of our ancestors.
But what a cool discovery of cooking.
Yes, cooking. It's been around for a while, it turns out.
Yes. It's very true. All right.
Of course, yes, if we wanted to do the deepest research possible, we would want to look into, I guess, the remains after they ate it to know for sure.
That is so true.
That brings us into our next topic, where we look exactly at excrement or the poo.
I was very highly interested in this when it came through. So, fecal flotation.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
literally just published a paper in the journal Scientific Reports on what causes poo to float.
Wow. And it's a little bit more complicated than we think, isn't it?
It is a little bit more complicated than we think, because it has to do with the gut microbiome.
Wow.
So, yes. Yes, indeed. As it turns out, different microbiomes will actually produce different gases. So what makes your poo float is it'll have more gases in it, little air bubbles in it that keep it on top of the old toilet bowl there.
Yes, so they did studies in mice, kind of playing with their gut microbial colonization, and found that it affected it, didn't they?
They did, and it was actually one of these discoveries by accident, because they were doing research on the microbiome of these mice, and they found that when they cleaned it out, they got rid of all the microbiome in their gut, that everything sunk. And they're like, whoa, wait a second.
Wow.
What have we done? So that, of course, made them study exactly how the microbiome impacts what they are. These are scientific terms now, but they're calling sinkers and floaters. These are scientific terminology here.
Very scientific. Sinkers and floaters.
Yes. They developed a test called the Levo-Infimo test. So this is, of course, going to be a little bit of Latin, but infimo was recently introduced into scientific parlance to describe feces examined experimentally.
Fantastic.
And the Latin word levo means to levitate or float. So therefore, the Levo Infimo test, LIFT or LIFT, is this new idea to understand if we have floaters or sinkers.
Fantastic. And they found that the feces of more than 10% of healthy individuals consistently float. So that's very interesting. They're trying to see if it's linked to any pathology, aren't they?
Exactly. Of course, early days of this research, but in the future, there have opened up a new area of study where we can try to understand if floaters could be indicative of patients with a bowel disorder will experience fecal flotation.
That is so very interesting. So, an accidental discovery, but potentially a very useful one along the way.
Potentially.
Amazing.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.